You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Hello, Charlotte Greenway in for Nick on Monday the 1st of April. And don't worry, there won't be any April Fool's jokes dropped on today's podcast. But what we do have is a reflection on the Dubai World Cup meeting before Dane O'Neill, who had so many big race successes in Dubai, is along to reflect on his career in the saddle, whilst Peter Maloney tells us more about the first foal of Honeysuckle born on Friday evening. Most importantly, though, I spoke to Nicky Henderson a little while ago and he offered a positive update on Constitution Hill following his colic scare, and it seems to be all systems go for Aintree for the remainder of his big guns. All to come, and Dave Yates will be alongside me for the duration. First off, Dave, some really classy performances on Saturday night at Maidan, none more so than that of Laurel River in the Dubai World Cup, where he won by 8 lengths, having made virtually all. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who wasn't impressed by that performance, Dave, by the Judmont Entire under Tige O'Shea, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I thought the same. There have been some impressive winners of the Dubai World Cup over the years, but I can't think of any really that had it done and dusted in quite the manner that Laurel River did in the straights. What an interesting horse he is, Charlotte. He's a six-year-old. That was his seventh start. It was his first at the top level, and he wins the Dubai World Cup by 8.5 lengths and in no conceivable danger entering the final furlong. Under Tai O'Shea, yeah, he was sensational. You know, it almost beggars belief that a horse trying the top level for the first time can be so destructive. But that's what he was, and it would be just watching the final furlong when he's cantering to victory. The thought inevitably goes through your head: where are we going to see this horse next? Would we see him in Europe? Would we see him in America? But yeah, he told the Daily Racing Form that might be it for the year. Is that right?
Yeah, I read that article and it's really disappointing news and sort of strange. He's obviously a delicate horse. We haven't seen him very often, but he's only had the 3 starts this year and he looks like a real contender for something at the Breeders' Cup.
You would have thought so. I was really surprised to read that, especially as in the Daily Racing Form piece, he said that the horse had come out of Saturday's race really well, but that might be it. It might be that the next big race target is not the Breeders' Cup Classic, which you'd have thought would be the natural place to go and the route to take, but he might go instead for the Saudi Cup of 2025, which is amazing. You know, we often talk on the NLD about how horses are campaigned, and I must admit I didn't expect that when reading a follow-up about Laurel River that we would be looking to 2025 for his next big race target. But Bhupat Seema seems to know what he's doing with this horse, who's been had a great career, albeit a lightly raced one thus far, and that's what he's decided.
Yeah, and he was very confident going into the race when he spoke to Nick last week, so I don't think the result came as any shock to him. Looking at the rest of the evening, it was sort of a mixed night for the British and Irish train runners.
It certainly was. Yeah, I mean, it started in really good style for Britain and Ireland in the Dubai Gold Cup. Tower of London won that in good style. Trawlerman, John Gosden, Siskany, Charlie Appleby were third and fourth in that race ahead of Marco Botti's Giavolotto. But yeah, interestingly, I think that a lot of betting firms reacted to that by pricing Tower of London up for the Gold Cup at Royal Ascot. But afterwards, Aidan O'Brien said it would be very likely that Tower of London would come back in trip. He thinks that he's one of those stayers who's just will prove just as adept at shorter distances. But I suppose the real talking point of the evening outside the Dubai World Cup was the Shima Classic. It was won by Rebel's Romance of Charlie Appleby's, a horse that we've seen trot round the globe to great effect over the last couple of years. Emily Upjohn, making her return, was fifth, but the real talking point, of course, was Auguste Rodin. The Dual Derby winner, of course, won the Breeders' Cup Turf and the Irish Champion Stakes last year. He's a five-time group or grade one winner in all. He made his return. He went off a well-backed favourite, outside of Dubai, of course, for the Shima Classic, and he just never looked like winning. He was in rear for most of the race, well, pretty much all of the race under Ryan Moore. He went into the turn with one or two horses behind him. He never looked like making any ground, and he trailed in last of the dozen runners. And this is the latest chapter, isn't it, in very much a chessboard career. When it comes to Auguste Rodin, we had the no show in the 2000 Guineas last year when he was 12th of 14 behind Chaldean. Also, of course, that 10th of 10 behind Hookham in the King George, the 6th and Queen Elizabeth Stakes at Ascot last July. Those among some stellar performances, the overhaul of King of Steel at Epsom, the performance at Santa Anita, and that that tactical masterclass of Ballydoyle's in the Irish Champion Stakes. But it seems, you know, his three-year-old career, there was the odd no-show that was thrown in there, and he started 2024 in the same fashion. I think that many of us were surprised when Auguste Rodin was kept in training as a four-year-old. I think when that announcement was made in, I think it was November, and we were expecting, he's going to join the Stallion roster. Obviously, it's been much has been made of the fact that he is a horse in whom East and West meet, being a son of the late Deep Impact and Rhododendron. Aidan O'Brien has always said he's an important horse for the breed. That's certainly true. But his racecourse career thus far, certainly over the last couple of years, has been a little bit hit and miss now. And certainly as somebody who is employed to tip horses for newspapers, it's really tricky with horses like this if you don't know which one is going to show up. In the past, Aidan O'Brien said that it might be an aversion to flying that was afflicting Auguste Rodin, but there seems to be plenty of confidence in this horse going into the Shima Classic. So what they will do with him now and where he will run and how he will run is of great interest to all of us.
And Dave, just going back to Tyoshe, he of course had a fantastic evening. He had two winners on the night, and his career, he obviously started over here, moved over there. It looks like it's been a really good move for him.
Yeah, of course, he's acknowledged that the debt that he owes to the late Sheikh Hamdan Al Maktoum, and of course he rode as number two to in the Shadwell colours. Richard Hills was the number one jockey to Sheikh Hamdan at the time. It all started with that scholarship to ride in the UAE when he was 19, and Tyoshe, now 42, he's what, an 11-time champion jockey in the UAE. So for all that, his time in Britain, I wouldn't describe it as a brief one, but it's certainly been outshone by his achievements in Dubai. And he's always dreamed of winning the Dubai World Cup. That dream has now been achieved. And it's quite right that he should acknowledge Sheikh Hamdan, because he was an absolutely central, pivotal figure in Tyoshe's career launch to where he is now.
Well, on the card at Maidan 12 months ago, Dane O'Neill rode a Group 1 winner, which would turn out to be his last at the top level. As on Friday, Dane announced that he had been forced to retire after 32 years in the saddle due to the injuries he suffered in a fall at Wolverhampton last July. And I caught up with him a little bit earlier to find out whether he'd been able to accept this decision yet, or whether that was just going to take a bit more time.
It's strange. I've been preparing myself for a couple of months about it. When I, not my last scan, my previous one, I said to the consultant, I said, look, I said, it's not looking good, is it? He said, no, not really, to be honest. He said, it could improve, but it has a long way to go. And I said, well, it's not looking like I'll get back then, is it? And he said, look, you've got 3 more months for your final scan. Why don't you take this time to prepare yourself mentally? And I've been trying to do that. But to answer your story, answer your question a little bit shorter, it's starting to drip in a little bit now. And yeah, I'm in a better place now and accepting it more than I did originally, you know.
You've had so many fruitful relationships over the years and long-standing ones too. But over that period, who would you say had the biggest influence on you?
It'd be very hard to single anyone out, really, you know, between Richard Hannon Sr., Henry Candy, and of course, you know, the late Sheikh Hamdan and his daughter, Sheikh Hissa. They've all given me equal opportunities. And I think that's why I've remained in each of those positions for so long, because, you know, it's been continued support, really. And as I said, I always managed to sort of go forward and improve my job position with each role I had, because of those people's support, not because we fell out and I had to move on.
And just from those sort of fabulous days that you've had in the saddle around the world, if you had to pick one, which day really stands out?
I would say the most recent, probably Dania winning the Alquaz sprint at Maidan last year. It capped off an amazing season. My best season in Dubai, my best and last season in Dubai, ironically. And after sort of being out there for 10 years, it was just fantastic. And a little side story to that, I was actually meant to be suspended. I got banned and I had to overturn the ban. And my appeal was successful, obviously. So, in a way, it was never going to happen for me. And then another stroke of luck to that season that I managed to overturn and get a winner.
And that sort of late association with Shadwell in Dubai and also other horses that over there as well, did you really sort of enjoy that late on in your career, being over there for the winter?
I did. It definitely added a few more years to my career. The constant travelling in England was always difficult. And I found that every year it was getting harder, even though we were eventually sort of brought down to the one meeting rule jockeys would now do. But it was still, you know, it just became harder and harder every season. And, you know, the merry-go-round for jockeys became more frequent. People didn't stay in positions as long either. So out there with less travel, good weather and good horses as well, that definitely helped.
You sat on some of the very best horses, Batash, Mahatha, Mossadaf, Muhara. Is it something that you look back on now and think, God, yeah, I'm really proud of what I achieved and sat on some fantastic horses, and that's what it's all about, being a jockey?
It is. I mean, you ask any jockey, that feeling you get when you know you've sat in a good horse, I mean, it just, you know, it's spine tingling, really, and it's what gets you up on the, you know, the dark sort of dreary days when there's, you know, there's no good horses in sight. You go out there looking for them special moments and them horses. I was very lucky. Listen, those horses you mentioned, you know, I managed to play a small part in all their careers, and they were such a massive part of my career. But again, very lucky that, you know, the Shadwell job enabled that. There was always one of them types of horses around the corner. And yeah, it's, now I look back and I really do appreciate it. Probably a couple of seasons ago, you just had your head down and you were just moving on so much that you never took time to reflect on it all. But I am very proud of it now.
Now then, looking ahead to the future, have you had time to sort of think what you might like to be involved in?
Not properly. I've been told by a few people, don't rush into anything and take your time and think about it. But I do keep telling these people I'm unemployed, so I do need to get a job. You know, I've been working since I was 16, and I'm a long way from 16 now. So, I need to get back to work. But I want to stay in racing in some capacity. And the one thing I've realised since I've been off is I do really miss the sport. And I know it's not going to be in the saddle anymore. But I'd like to still be involved and give something back more than anything.
Well, Dane, thank you so much for your time this morning, and very much look forward to sort of hearing and following what you do next.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Dave, it's unfortunate, of course, for Dane that it wasn't his decision ultimately to retire, but he's had a great career all around the world and some really long-standing relationships that obviously show the kind of man he is.
Yeah, I think when you speak to everyone about Dane O'Neill, and I wouldn't claim to know him well personally at all, but he's clearly somebody, by dint of those long relationships, the length of those relationships, that he's a team player, that he gets on well with everybody. He's just one of those jockeys, Charlotte, that over the years you could set your clocks by, I think. Obviously a long association with Richard Hannon too. Going back, he was champion apprentice in 96. He's now 48. And he's been, by dint of being that, having that team player ethos, he's been number two jockey to Sheikh Hamdan. He's been associated with some really good horses. Of course, he won the Commonwealth Cup, the first running of it in 2015 on Shadwell's Muhara. Other horses he's been associated with by Batash Tegruda. He rode Tegruda in her first victory before Paul Hannigan, who was then, of course, stable jockey or retained jockey by Sheikh Hamdan, took over. So it's been a really long and consistently rich career that Dane O'Neill has had. As you say, it's always uppermost in every jockey's thoughts, either flat or jumps, that they're able to retire on their own terms. Sadly, Dane hasn't been able to do that. The seven ribs that he broke and the vertebra in that fall at Wolverhampton last July have proved one obstacle too far. But he can look back on a superb career where he's proved ultra-reliable, very popular. I'm sure there are very few people who've got a bad word to say about him, and that's just as important as all the prizes that he's won over the last, what, three decades.
Well, worrying news came through to us yesterday via Seven Barrows' Twitter feed that Constitution Hill had been in veterinary hospital since Wednesday evening as they were monitoring a possible colic situation. And I just caught up with Nicky Henderson a little bit earlier this morning to get an update.
Yeah, well, the good news is he's on his way home.
He's on his way home. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes, but he's not home yet.
Well, no, that's great news to hear. And just the rest of the string, are you happy with it, how they're looking at the moment?
Yeah, no, all's going well.
And all big guns on, most of the big guns on course for Aintree?
At the moment, yeah, John Bond, Shishkin, Cicino. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot, yeah. That's the plan.
Great. And just what have they got to do before then? Is it more scopes, blood tests, or...? Is that all behind them?
Well, they will do it before they get. Yeah, I mean, everything does, but everything always did, so that's nothing's happened. Yeah, we test everything before it runs. Yeah, so they were, Lucia, she's going there for the entry hurdle, yes. First day, Gino, Shishkin, second day would be John Bond. Fantastic ladies in the top of Amulet and Ash, I shouldn't need to get into that. Shanna Bob, and another novice probably for the Sefton. There's a whole lot for the handicap hurdle, first treat, good lord, all those sort of things. Saturday, there's a whole stack of them. Jericho will probably come into it. More handicaps, so on and so on. We were very happy with them all on Saturday, so the plan is, you know, let's get on together.
Well, that's great news, Nicky, but the best news is that Constitution Hill is on his way home, so thanks so much.
Thanks.
Well, Dave, that's the best possible news that we could have asked for with regards to Constitution Hill, that he's on his way home and he's on the mend. But poor horse, he's had a torrid month, hasn't he?
Yeah, he certainly has. Well, I mean, it started just over a week before the champion hurdle when he was pulled out of the race. Of course, I think it was the previous Tuesday he'd had that infamous gallop at Kempton Park. And yeah, it's been a tough few weeks, but I mean, those travails are as nothing compared to suspected colic, aren't they, Charlotte? You know, you can have a virus that rules you out of a race and that you know, will prevent you from performing at your optimum, but colic can be a lethal condition for horses, and so goodness knows what they've been through over the last few days with this horse. It's reassuring that he's on his way back and that all seems well. I hope with all my heart that that is something that doesn't return to hit Constitution Hill. Obviously, it looks now as though the run at Punchestown for the champion hurdle there, which probably would have been a clash with Stateman, that won't happen now. But the most important thing is that this horse makes a full return to health, that he'll have a summer at grass, hopefully, and then come back for a busier and a more rewarding campaign next year. Much has been said and written about Constitution Hill's season. It's been something of a write-off with just the one race, and hopefully he can return. I'm sure that the plan will be to come back for the Fighting Fifth. Let's hope that's on next year, and he can follow a path back to Cheltenham to try and get his champion hurdle crown back. He's only 7 years old now. He'll be eight at Cheltenham, obviously, in 11 months' time, and so, all being well, he should still be able to perform at the peak of his powers. But in the short term, I'm sure everybody just wishes this horse a full and speedy recovery, and that we see him back on the track in the autumn.
Very much so. And I thought it was very positive news with regards to the Aintree runners. It seems like they're in good form and quite a formidable team he's got to send there. So, yeah, it'd be great if they can turn up there in tip-top form, because it was obviously unfortunate the Cheltenham Festival that they had, but Aintree could be their week.
Yeah, it looks that way. Obviously, it was a Cheltenham that all at Seven Barrows would rather forget. It was certainly, I think it was in 2008, 2009, when Nicky Henson last had a blank year at the Cheltenham Festival. And, you know, it started, we were all, 2008 was the last blank. You know, it started on the Tuesday with Jericho de Repenay in the Supreme Novices Hurdle. And, of course, then we had the scratchings of the likes of Jean Bon, Shishkin and Sergino. When I spoke to Nicky Henson last week, he said that there was still a way to go, but he felt that they were back on track. And you've now spoke to him after the gallop on Saturday, where the horses worked on the grass, and it seems that things are coming back to normal. You know, again, we've it's sort of said that the lack of winners and runners from Seven Barrows skewed the idea of the Irish domination at Cheltenham. I don't row in with that, because they would still have been wholly dominant in any case. But he's obviously the trainer who has pretty much led the home defence over the last few years at Cheltenham. And it's disappointing we didn't see those stars. I think that lots of people thought that Shishkin was capable of running a good race in the Gold Cup. Sergino was obviously odds on at one point for the Triumph Hurdle. And given what happened to El Fabiolo in the Champion Chase, it may well have been that a peak fitness Jean Bon might have won that. But it's good that they're back. Certainly, Aintree would be much the poorer without a strong presence from Seven Barrows. But it looks, at the moment at least, as though we're going to get that now.
Well, you mentioned Irish domination. It was Willie Mullins' domination again yesterday, as he had an across-the-card seven-timer. And Dave, he's already hit the record number of winners in a season in Ireland with 1 month to go.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting. He actually had eight winners on Easter Sunday last year, but I think it's stretching it to say that Mullins is on the decline. He has now trained 238 winners in the season, or reached the milestone of 238. He set the previous best last year with 237, and that seven-timer yesterday achieved an odds of 631-1, and obviously we've still got a fair chunk of the season yet to go. So it does, one thing that this does demonstrate to us, Charlotte, is you know, I've spoken about this before, that just quite how quickly things have happened in jump racing. That, you know, only a handful of years ago Willie Mullins wasn't thinking of sort of 9 or 10 winners at the Cheltenham Festival. Now this shows you that the strength that he's got at Clissutton and how much greater that is even than last year. You know, the fact that he surpassed last season's total with the weeks that remain. You know, Punchestown runs from April into May. So I don't know what we'll be looking at by the time we get to the final day of the Punchestown Festival, but it just shows you that, you know, whatever Mullins has done in the last couple of years, the model of 23-24 is much, much stronger still.
Well, the standout of Willie Mullins' 7-timer yesterday was Jade DeGrugy landing a Grade 1 in the colours of Kenny Alexander, whose racing manager Peter Maloney joins me on the line now. Peter, after a Grade 1 winner yesterday, it's not often that we wouldn't kick off the interview with that. But just first, on Friday night, Jump Racing royalty was born as Honeysuckle had her first foal, a filly by Walk in the Park at Kenny Alexander's place in Scotland. And both mum and foal are doing well, I believe.
Yeah, no, they're both great. I actually left Fairy House on Sunday evening and hopped on a plane and went over and saw her first thing Monday morning. And so she's a sweet filly. She's a first foal, so she's maybe a little bit small, but she's beautifully made. Everything's in the right place, and yeah, mother and daughter are safe and well.
And just when you're looking at a foal that's a few days old, what are you looking for in a good foal?
Listen, you can't judge them too much because they change so fast. But, you know, if there's any obvious deformities or anything like that, but she has none of those, thankfully, you'll often get a little bit of, you know, weakness in limbs and things, which usually can will strengthen up over a few days, you know, the first few days and first few weeks. But and then just general size and scope. But I'd say she's beautifully made at the moment. We could probably do a little bit more size, but she'll never be sold. And she's a very special little person.
And what's the wait been like for you all? Is it sort of excitement, nervousness, bit of both?
A little bit of both. You know, we're in this game a long time, and things happen. You know, it's a dangerous time for mother and foaling and thoroughbred the delicate animals. And you know, you're always a little bit of apprehension, and when everything has happened safely, it's a huge relief.
And she's going to get an awful lot of attention from, you know, people in the outside world asking how she's doing. Everyone just will be hoping that we get to see her on the track one day. But is it important now that she's just treated like any other foal on the farm?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. She's a horse, and she'll be treated like a horse, and she'll grow up best if she's treated like a horse. And absolutely, she'll be like any other horse.
Well, Jade DeGrugy took a big step in the right direction as she tries to fill Honeysuckle's boots when winning the Grade 1 Honeysuckle Mares Novices Hurdle at Fairy House yesterday. That must have meant quite a lot to win that one.
It was fantastic. Like, it was a huge honour, just, you know, for the race to be named after Honeysuckle. And then, you know, then to go and win it, that's beyond dreams, really. So, it was wonderful. And Emma McDermott did a wonderful sculpture of Rachel and Honey jumping the last in Champion Hurdle. And so that was Kenny very kindly donated one of the sculptures to Fairy House Racecourse. That was presented yesterday's trophy. The whole thing was just wonderful.
Very nice for Kenny to take that home. And just, she must have a fantastic constitution because it was, 17 days after her fourth at Cheltenham Festival. Will she be aimed at Punchestown now, or does she need a bit of a break?
She's clearly tough. As I say, you know, it was two tough races in a short period of time. I had a quick chat with Willie yesterday evening before we left the race course. And she's gone back to Clissutton now, and they'll see how she is. He is thinking, you know, if she comes out of these races well, There might be another race in her this spring, and then give her the autumn off, and then start her sort of after Christmas in the new year. But she'll tell them, and they're masters of their craft. They know what they're doing, so I'm not going to second guess them, to be honest.
No, nobody can. And just on her future, is she a hurdler through and through, or might she jump a fence?
No, she's a nice big Scopey mare, so she could do either. She could do either. Just take one race at a time now. And then in the summer, we'll sit down and make a plan for her.
Well, Peter, thanks so much for your time this morning. And yeah, we look forward to following the journey of Honeysuckle's filly as she sort of hopefully makes her way to the track.
Very good. Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Peter Maloney there, and while Jade de Grugy won one of the two Grade 1s at Fairy House yesterday, the other was won by Spillane's Tower. And Dave, this was a heartwarming story for the Mangum family.
Yeah, absolutely. A really popular victory, this for Spillane's Tower. A horse that we didn't see at the Cheltenham Festival, but he's now put his trainer Jimmy Mangan back in the Grade 1 spotlight. Funnily enough, that the last time he was there, it was in 2008 in exactly the same race with Connor Castle, who was ridden by Paul Carberry that afternoon. Of course, that was 5 years on from the career highlight of Jimmy Mangan, which was Monty's Pass in the Grand National at Aintree. And yeah, Spillane's Tower has put him back there. A really popular trainer, of course, father of Jane Mangan, whom we know so well on the Nick Luck Daily. And as you say, a really warming result, this. And doesn't it show what a strength JP McManus has with his novice chasers, particularly those that are going to go over a trip? Spillane's Tower, Factor File, I Know the Way You're Thinking, Corbett's Cross, of course, from the National Hunt Chase as well. So there's something to look forward to there for JP McManus, but for Jimmy Mangan, a trainer who is less accustomed to victory at the top level than the owner. This was a landmark triumph and a really popular one.
Yeah, and just on those JP McManus novice chasers this year, obviously going into open company, I'm sure they'll be trying to keep them apart as much as possible next season. So we might get to see a bit more of them on this side of the Irish Sea.
Yeah, we might well do. I suppose the one thing with the McManus horses, you know, he's got so many of them, Charlotte, hasn't he, that we're used to seeing different coloured caps in the big races. And yeah, I mean, certainly as the season progresses, it's going to be harder to keep those horses apart, isn't it? If they're genuine, you know, 3 mile plus chasers, they're only a certain number of races. But yeah, we might see them in Britain. It's the way of things these days that the best horses, unfortunately, tend to be kept apart until we get to the spring festivals. So yeah, we might see a bit of those. We might see more of those horses in Britain during the earlier part of the season. And I expect we'll certainly see them back here when we get to the spring.
Okay, Dave, well, a nice mix of both codes today, but where are you heading with your tip this afternoon?
Right, Charlotte, we are going to Kempton Park and for the 4:40 race there, and the selection is number 5, Voltar. This horse is on a hat-trick, ended 2023 with a victory at Kempton, began in similar style there last month, still on an upward curve. Clive Cox is in excellent form, and Richard Kingscote again does the steering here. So hopefully there's more to come. There is a £5 higher mark to overcome, but I think that Voltar can prove up to the job. 4:40 race at Kempton Park, selection number 5, Voltar.
My thanks to Dave, and thanks to all my guests today. Tom Stanley will be with you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of the bank holiday Monday. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.